1 week from today, kids in Duval County head back to school. Just ahead, a look at the new school year from our superintendent and what parents and students can expect. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening on this Monday. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher so you can never miss a show. And just ahead, also don't miss it, as Duval Superintendent Nicolai Vitti takes your calls 1 week out from school. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Also this morning, if you're thinking of hiring a tutor for your child this school year, we've got some tips. Then later, Culpepper on one of the greatest weeks in Jacksonville sports history. He'll tell you all about it, all of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, students in Duval County Public Schools go back to class 1 week from today, and there is a lot to discuss as parents, kids, and teachers get ready for the new school year, from new technology upgrades at your child's school to a new code of conduct and a whole lot more. Superintendent Nicolai Vitti here in studio now with a back-to-school interview looking at his and the district's goals for the year. Superintendent Vitti, always a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And the calls are already coming in for Superintendent Vitti. What are your questions about the coming school year? Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Lots of comments from you came in over the weekend on Facebook as well. We'll get to those in just a moment. Let's begin with the story appearing in this weekend's Times Union, that a teacher shortage around the country that forced so many school districts to scramble over the summer to hire enough educators has not been an issue in Northeast Florida. Why is that?
Well, we've become extremely proactive in recruiting teachers. So we're taking a proactive approach, not a reactive approach. And just to give you a sense of that, at this time last year, we had 120 teacher vacancies. Right now, as of today, we only have 60. And mainly the reason for that is recruiting early. We sent teams of principals, district staff, and even some teachers throughout the country, mainly the Midwest, to recruit teachers early and putting that and ask them to sign open contracts, which basically guaranteed them a position pending placement, offered incentives in math and science and ESE for an additional incentive to bring those teachers, which are usually our critical shortage areas. And then lastly, our work in our hard-to-staff schools, our lower-performing schools in a Rebalt Range Jackson feeder pattern, has led those schools to have a more stability with the teacher core, and those schools are usually our toughest of staff. So a combination of those different strategies have led us in a very good position with only a week to go and very much more favorable as compared to other large urban districts throughout the country.
What are your responses to those critical of staffing some classrooms with Teach for America teachers? They're younger, less expensive. They sign up for a commitment of a few years. Some educators in the district have criticized Duval employing Teach for America. Your thoughts?
Sure. Well, the partnership with Teach for America goes beyond just a critical staffing issue. The core members that come are highly educated, some of the best and brightest in the university setting, and they have a deep commitment to narrowing the achievement gap, and they bring a level of energy, expertise with the content, not always knowing how to teach the content, and that comes through the TFA training and the work that we do with them in the classroom. But ultimately, we know that the pipeline of those individuals going into the classroom is not as strong as it used to be, and with the baby boom generation now retiring, there is significant demand and a gap regarding staffing. So to offer that pipeline of teachers that have done very well in undergraduates. These are the same individuals that usually go on to become doctors, lawyers, business leaders. And so to be able to capture some of those students and have them teach in our schools, I think is a great opportunity for our children. And then our challenge is keeping them beyond that those first 2 years, and we've done that. As compared last year, we've had almost a 15 percentage point increase in the number of third year TFA core members that are staying, and I think that will continue. I think it's also important for the audience to know that TFA is not our only strategy. We've created the Jacksonville Teacher Residency Program, which builds off the TFA model, where we're offering a fully paid master's degree from UNF, which is privately funded through our Quality Education for All initiative, where undergraduates who major in a STEM area receive a master's degree, work alongside a master teacher for a full year, and then they have to commit to 3 years in teaching in our hard-to-staff schools in a Rebalt Raines Jackson feeder pattern. So TFA is not our only solution to the hard-to-staff challenge. It's also using programs like the Jacksonville Teacher Residency Program, which is homegrown and an alternative to just TFA.
We'll go to your calls for Duval Superintendent Nicolai Vitti in just a moment. 549-2937, 1 week out from school. Lots of discussion about the new code of conduct for the Duval schools and a nonviolence project that's initiating this year. When it comes to providing a safe, harmonious atmosphere and strong rules about conduct for students, there's a lot to discuss there as well.
Well, we're excited about our new code of conduct going into this year. We've made tremendous strides regarding creating a positive behavior support culture in our schools, where we're using progressive discipline and trying to get to the root cause of the disciplinary problems. But based on the feedback of principals, teachers, deans, we knew we had to become a bit more aggressive when it came to fighting. So this year, we're reinstituting something that a lot of, I think, of our parents will be familiar with, which is a merit system or a demerit system. After a certain number of incidents, whether they're minor or major, it will lead to a recommendation to an alternative school. And so basically, if students are involved in any type of physical contact, whether they initiated or they're involved with it three times, it will lead for an automatic hearing to place the student at an alternative school. So I think overall parents will see and teachers will see more intervention in an alternative setting for students that are consistently disruptive and violent.
And in keeping with that, when you discuss the root causes of kids acting out and making bad choices, you joined with the Reverend John Guns of Bethel Baptist Church when he issued a call for 1,000 men to be present in our public schools to provide guidance for, especially for young African-American males. That's a big initiative this year that will really be present in the schools, correct?
Correct, and I'm glad you brought that up, because our approach is to continue to focus on the progressive discipline and be more aggressive regarding physical contact. But we also have to build the safety net and the support systems for students as well. So it's a three-pronged approach. But the partnership with Pastor Guns has led to our principals and our teachers feeling as if they're not on an island. To see that many men show up to our schools at the end of last year for the last 2 weeks, and then continuing that partnership going into this year, leaves our teachers, our principals, and especially our students knowing that people care about them in the general community. And that extra support leads to mentoring, stronger relationships, and that will eventually culminate into a partnership mainly with Pastor Guns called Young Guns, where we'll have male mentors with our at-risk students at select elementary schools, and we will be announcing in a couple of weeks the 5,000 Role Models program, which is a mentoring program at the middle school and high school level. So a lot of the men that are in our schools, were in our schools at the latter part of last year and the beginning of this year, will be recruited to be mentors for those initiatives.
Public safety, the safety of kids on campus extends beyond the school building. You had looked at perhaps changing the start times of high school football games this year after shooting deaths at two First Coast High School football games. Is that still up in the air, or has that been decided?
Well, we worked the latter part of the spring into the summer as far as analyzing that situation. Our main concern right now are games at the First Coast, at home games for First Coast, and particular games between First Coast and other schools. At this point, we are not going to make any changes. We are going to meet with the parents First Coast football players in the coming week to talk about the situation and asking them for additional support to make sure that those games are safe. We will obviously always provide additional security, but at this point we are not making changes based on the information we have. I think as we get closer to the actual games, depending on what's happening in the general community and what we're hearing from JSO and what's happening at the school site, we may end up changing some of those game times.
But as of right now, Friday night lights stay.
Correct.
For now, anyway.
For now.
And let's go to your calls for Superintendent Nico Lividi. In a moment, we'll talk about new technology in the schools, the new GRASP Academy, and more. 549-2937. Josh in San Marco. Hey, Josh, happy Monday to you. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a lot, Melissa. Hey, Dr. Vidi. Question is, graduated from a reputable university up north, middle childhood education. But I'm on my way to Florida. I currently work for the Department of Education, but I cannot get hired by Duval County Public Schools because I have on my record some minor misdemeanors. And I think when I tried to get in, it was one of those things where, and I'm not putting you on the spot, although I suppose I am. Dr. Vidi will review this at some point, was what I was told. And so I have those misdemeanors, and I think it's because I have more than one, so I can't get one step in the door, and I sure would like to be part of your solution. So if you could speak to it, and if you can't, I can follow up with you outside of the show.
Thank you, Josh.
Well, thank you for the call, and thank you for your willingness and desire to be part of our organization to do things differently for children. What I would recommend that you do is email me directly, and my team can look at your particular situation. I have made some recommendations to the board, and they supported it. Generally didn't have to vote on it, but supported it to allow those individuals who had committed certain crimes over a long period of time to have a second chance to come back in the school system, because we all make mistakes, and sometimes those individuals can offer life stories that are more compelling than the average teacher or employee. So email me directly and we'll see what we can do. Obviously, I can't break state law regarding that issue, but please email me and we'll work with you directly.
Emily on the South Side. Emily, you're connected with the superintendent. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. I understand that the school system has made a partnership with the library as far as the elementary students getting access to library materials, connecting their student ID. And I was concerned with the middle school students who don't have libraries in their schools that they can check out books, if there was any plans to include the middle school students in this partnership with the library.
Thanks, Emily. And let's talk about that and also the new curriculum for elementary students.
Sure. So our partnership right now is the focus is elementary, to offer an easier way for our students to have access to a library card and check out a minimal number of books. But that will also eventually be expanded to include all of our elementary schools visiting an actual public library. That initiative will also eventually include middle school. I don't think we'll get to middle school this year. Our focus is elementary. But our middle schools will have libraries open. There may not be a media specialist at every middle school, but we do have part-time individuals that work in our libraries and other personnel that allow the library to be open. So every middle school library is open at certain points of the day. And obviously, teachers still bring their middle school students to the library to check out books and conduct research. Your question about curriculum, very excited about our new curriculum at the elementary level in math and reading. We've trained almost 90% of our teachers over the summer. Those that weren't able to attend because of family conflicts or late hires will go through training this week, actually. But the feedback has been very strong from our teachers about the alignment to the new curriculum, or the new standards, I should say, and the ease in which from an initial access point that they're aligned. So a lot of great feedback in that regard, and I think we're going to see another level of instruction at the elementary level, especially when it comes to writing and reading, talking to about the text and analyzing the text and books and content that I think students will find more engaging. And in math, I think we'll find that the curriculum leads to the teaching of the new standards with a bit more of ease. We'll see more use of manipulatives, more hands-on activities for students at the elementary level in mathematics, and I think that will also lead to a higher level of engagement and, believe it or not, enjoyment of mathematics.
That would be a welcome change in my house with my two. Anything to get them engaged in that subject, and I know a lot of other parents probably can relate, is welcome news. And also some other news of note to talk about for this new school year. When it comes to technology upgrades throughout the public schools, there's been a bump up. Is that right?
There has been, and that's been one of our major points of emphasis since I started as superintendent. When we started, only one school out of 160 was wireless, fully wireless. And going at the end of this school year, the end of the 15-16 year, every one of our schools will be wireless. When we started, it was about a 3-to-1 student-to-device ratio. At the end of this year, we'll be at 1-to-1.5. All of our middle school and high school reading, math, language arts, social studies, and science teachers will have interactive whiteboards, or really it looks more like a TV monitor that's interactive, and most of our school classrooms in those core content areas will have response clickers. All of the schools in the Rebalt Rains Jackson feeder pattern will be 1-to-1, meaning student to teacher device ratio with interactive whiteboards. So very excited about what that means as far as equipping our students with the tools to be competitive in this international market, but also an education system that needs to be shifting toward technology usage. Consider that's how our children think and learn.
549-2937 to connect with Duval Superintendent Nico Livedi. Can you believe we're 1 week out from Duval children going back to school? What are your questions? Bill in Mandarin. Hey, Bill. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm not sure if my question's out of date or not, but about 10 years ago, I served on the Magnet Advisory School Board. And there's all kinds of excellent magnet programs for different professions, but one thing we didn't have back then was, I thought, the most important profession, and when you could have the most impact on, was a magnet program for future educators and teachers. Has that been brought into the system, or, and if not, why not?
Thanks, Bill.
Great question. We did have, and we still have, a bit of a small program at Baldwin to work with possible future teachers. But the reality is a lot of our students do not necessarily get excited about the possibility of being a teacher. So whether it's in my former life in Miami or in some of the programs here, we haven't had much success recruiting our students to become teachers. We've had some success with having our students work in our pre-K programs or our early childhood programs because they're more interested in working with very young children. But as far as elementary, middle, or high school teachers, we haven't had as much success with creating a pipeline in that regard. Most of our students are more excited about other professions than teaching. And then usually that interest in teaching becomes more pronounced once students get into college. It's something that we'll continue to pursue, but at this point we haven't had a lot of success in that area, but good question.
There, speaking of magnet schools, let's talk about the new GRASP Academy. That's a project that you have been engaged in. That's opening this fall in the Arlington area. This involves helping students with dyslexia and learning disorders. You're dyslexic, so this is something that is personal for you, correct?
Very personal for me. It led to a lot of struggles in school for me academically, but eventually was able to overcome that with the right adults supporting me and my own self advocacy and just awareness of the disability. But with that said, I'm excited to offer Florida's first traditional public school dyslexic program and one of the few nationally. Most dyslexic programs are run by private schools, which require a bit of private dollars spent for that or the use of the McKay Scholarship. We're at over 250 students already. And it'll be grade 2nd to 7th grade and then moving on to 8th grade the following year. But received a lot of questions. We had a parent move all the way from Orlando to be a part of the program. We had another parent move from Pensacola. And the state legislature has become very interested in the GRASS program and talking about possibly funding pilot programs throughout the country and even revising the way in which disabilities are identified. Dyslexia is not defined as a disability, but most dyslexics are defined in the IEP, Individual Education Plan process, through a learning disability in reading or math. So heightened awareness, a lot of positive energy about the school, and I think it's yet another example of us offering a new program to recapture students in a traditional public school setting and keeping students in a traditional public school setting. But I think the one thing that's also exciting about the GRASS program is how it's influencing our thought on Tier 3 reading intervention. So not every student can be a part of GRASS because of the distance in traveling there, or they just feel more comfortable in their traditional school. But we have a lot of struggling readers, obviously, outside of the GRASP Academy. And the interventions that are happening at the GRASP are influencing how we're intervening with struggling readers throughout the county, especially at the elementary level. And a point of note is over 80% of students showed almost 2 years of growth in reading last year at the GRASP, and we want to replicate that kind of practice and intervention district-wide so our struggling readers, regardless of the school that they're in or their zip code they're in, can see that kind of improvement.
And your wife, Rachel Vitti, has also taken the lead on getting GRASP Academy off the ground.
She has, yeah. And she's become part of understood.org, doing great work with creating awareness about ESE issues, not only dyslexia, but it's a national movement, and she's been a part of that and done a great job with creating awareness about GRASP and connecting people throughout the community to support GRASP.
We'll go to many more calls coming in from you for Superintendent Nicolai Vitti in just a moment. First, though, let's get to a few comments on Facebook and Twitter. Here's one for you from John Alaska at Atlantic Coast High. What evidence can Dr. Vitti give to counter the claim that he's just another superintendent driven by data and tests with no real concern for teachers' or students' well-being?
Well, every day I wake up, it's about children, and it's about what we're going to do differently for children. I am very data-driven. I think that as a leader, you need to be objective and look at trends to inform decisions. But ultimately, what matters most to me is what's happening for children. I think as it relates to students and children, and something I'm excited about going into this year, is our reduction in testing. So that was came directly from teachers as far as a complaint and students. You're going to see a significant decline in the amount of internal testing that we do, and also paperwork reduction. We made a significant agreement with DTU to reduce the amount of paperwork that was done. In fact, I sent out an email over the weekend stating that because of the new elementary curriculum that I mentioned earlier, teachers don't have to simply cut and paste things into a piece of paper to say that they're teaching to the standards and they're well prepared, because that's already embedded in the curriculum. Removing a lot of the word walls and bulletin boards and things like that were all ways to directly address the concerns that teachers had. But and all the work that we're doing around wraparound services, the nonviolence project, speaks to the commitment to the whole child. I mean, when you talk about, well, the superintendent's always data-driven, and at the same time, we've never seen the kind of expansion that we've seen in the arts. To have a full-time music and art teacher in every elementary school to ensure that every middle school has an art or a music program. Our work with even dual language, the expansion of dual language programs, ensuring every middle school has a foreign language program. That has nothing to do with testing or data. That has more to do with what children often are most excited about when they come to school. And I think we've made huge inroads in those areas as compared to other large large districts throughout the country.
Other districts around the country have changed the calendar in some respects. Here's a comment on Facebook. What are the superintendent's thoughts about year-round public school? Rejiggering the school calendar, some districts have experimented with that, in particular saying summer break is too long and kids experience an academic slide. I know you've looked at that heavily.
Well, one thing that we are doing is next year, so 16-17, we'll start the school year a week earlier. That's a small change, which I think will have a positive impact. But I do believe that the school year is too short. I am concerned about the summer loss or the summer slide. But I don't necessarily believe at this point that if I were going to make a recommendation, I would extend the school year for all students. I think it needs to be more strategic with those students that are farther behind and those students that aren't necessarily going on the vacations over the summer and expanding their background knowledge and participating in other activities. So if I were to expand the school year, it would target those students that are farthest behind and least likely to be a part of something positive over the summer.
I know another change you've at least talked about is changing the start times, in particular for high school students in Duval County, since the data shows that teenagers really aren't able to learn due to endocrinological changes in their brains as teens. They're not able to really learn and process information when they're going to school so early in the morning. Some districts have changed that so that the older kids go to school later in the day. Is that something that you're still considering?
Well, I am very sympathetic to it. I think it makes sense. It makes sense from a research-based approach, but it also makes sense from an anecdotal approach. And I think we all can relate to, obviously, when we were teenagers and how hard it was to get up out of bed. But with all of that said, the challenge is an operational one regarding how we run the buses. I continue to push our organization to think through the different options, but it also would be very disruptive to our magnet hubs as well, based on how those operate. We could do it, but with a significant cost. And at this point, I don't think the cost is worth the change. And I think it could hurt our magnet transportation lines. And I think that would obviously bring some dissatisfaction to parents in the community as well.
Gordon in Jacksonville, thanks for holding. Gordon, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to commend Dr. Beattie on everything he has done since becoming the superintendent of schools in Duval County. I've had a daughter graduate, a daughter currently going to Stanton College Preparatory School, and everything he has done for the magnet program, he deserves kudos for. I think he's doing a magnificent job. Keep up the good work, doctor.
All right, thanks, Gordon. Katie in Mandarin. Hey, Katie, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, I was calling because I heard Wolfson High School was turning into a magnet for the 2016-2017 school year, and I was calling as a resident with kids that would be in that feeder pattern to know if it's a magnet. Hi, I was calling because I
heard you.
That
Wolfson, you're on the air. Yeah, we got it.
A magnet school.
Yeah, let's find out, Dr. Beattie.
So that right now it is a proposal. We discussed this in mid-July with the board. The next step is to engage the greater community, namely the Wolfson community, on the change. But the change would convert Wolfson to a dedicated magnet, building off its international baccalaureate theme. And that would permeate the entire school. We're looking at whether we do a complete change 9-12 in the 16-17 year, or if we phase it in with just ninth grade. But we do know that we're losing a lot of students in the Wolfson feeder pattern to private schools and other dedicated magnets. We want to increase enrollment and allow more neighborhood students to access the school. And right now it seems to be a programmatic issue for those students not attending Wolfson. So we'll start with engaging the SAC, the PTA, teachers, faculty, and then parents, and then go broader as far as the change is concerned. We also are excited about offering other programs. The plan is to create a vocational school at the middle school and high school level with a focus on carpentry, plumbing, electrician work, air conditioning repairs, so more of the traditional trades and bringing that back in. Also, our plan is to create a second La Villa middle school, but on the west side. We need more dramatic, aggressive programming on the west side that has not been a point of emphasis over the last decade. And then another area of focus is to bring a military high school, possibly to Ed White, which again is on the west side, to bring new and different programs. We've seen a tremendous loss in enrollment on the west side due to charter and expansion. So we know that we need to be more competitive in, on the west side as far as new programs are concerned.
Lots of changes coming down the pike. And as we said, it's 1 week away. So get ready, parents. Dr. Nicolai Vitti, thanks for being with us. And well, here's to a great school year.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. Always enjoy it.
And much more still ahead. Later, Culpepper on one huge weekend for Jacksonville sports. But up next, speaking of back to school, some tips for you if you're thinking of hiring a tutor for your child. That's in a moment.
Education coverage on First Coast Connect is made possible in part by a grant from the Chartrand Foundation.
Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
The thing that's cool for me is that I it feels like it's the music of my life.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Caption: I leapt out of the closet. And 4 months later, my father killed himself by stepping in front of a truck.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the Tony Award-winning musical Fun Home with Alison Bechdel, who wrote the memoir it's based on, and with the show's songwriters. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, as kids get ready for the new school year, parents are thinking about new clothes, new supplies, but what about adding a tutor to the back-to-school list? Many need one. And with some tips on getting your child on the path to success this academic year, we welcome Michelle Kaiser. She's the lead tutor at Empower Tutoring. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And as we just spoke with the superintendent, there's going to be a new curriculum this year, mm-hmm. some changes. This may be challenging for a lot of students. Mm-hmm. Many parents turn to a tutor. This is the time parents need to be thinking about that. What's the first thing they should do if they're considering this?
I think it's important for parents to be proactive, especially at the beginning of the school year, to try to find a tutor that they can, you know, connect with, have good communication, and that they trust. So then when problems do arise, the tutor's already there, they have the established relationship, and they're ready to go before things get too bad.
And often parents wait till they're in crisis.
Absolutely.
When their child is flunking out or D's and F's, and they don't know what to do or where to turn. Mm-hmm. What are the hallmarks of a great tutor?
Some of the things you'll see with a great tutor is, you know, personalized service. Somebody that's going to look at what your child is specifically struggling with, which may not actually be the subject that they're in. For instance, if they're in algebra, but they may be struggling with fractions. So a good tutor is going to be able to identify those weak spots that may go back several years and work on reinforcing those points. So they're going to give you a personalized service that's tailored to your child and their specific needs.
And often it seems, particularly with math, and I know you specialize in this, now that math is being taught in a new way, mm-hmm. Very often parents, and I've experienced this in my own house, we struggle trying to teach our kids math because the way we were taught math isn't the way it's being taught today. And so how do you deal with that as a math tutor in explaining these concepts to children with these new state standards?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. What I found is that the new standards, they are, you know, very difficult for parents who haven't seen it, but they do focus on understanding the why. Why are we doing this? How does it work? So instead of teaching students the way that many of us learned, which is sort of through rote calculations
right.
and memorization,
right.
they're teaching the students to think about the content and understand exactly what they're doing. So I believe that that model for math and for other subjects is really going to benefit the student in the long term. But if you're the parent sitting there and looking at some Common Core curriculum, you know, you're totally lost.
Oh, my goodness, yes. That has definitely happened to me. And so, in a sense, what you are is you're a coach for a child. You're like a coach.
Absolutely. A coach, or sometimes I tell parents I'll be like a mentor. Somebody there that's to, you know, a good tutor is going to be somebody that supports the student, that is there to encourage them, but also, you know, not just being a babysitter and watching them do their homework, that they're there to help the student learn how to learn, so that student can go on and, you know, do the work on their own and start acing those tests on their own. The tutor's not going to be there when you're taking the test.
What are the areas where parents, what academic subjects are most in demand for tutoring?
Math, like you mentioned, is
math.
One of the high ones.
Yep. Yeah.
But also we'll see a lot sciences. There's many students who are in AP classes, so AP English, chemistry, history. Pretty much any subject, there's a tutor out there for it. I know, you know, there are tutors for foreign language and even instruments.
Right, you name it. But
but
math at the top of the list.
It definitely is a big one. And I think what you pointed out earlier is that parents, you know, aren't really confident in their ability to teach it. And as, you know, Dr. Vitti mentioned previously, it's so important to encourage that enjoyment of mathematics.
And do you, I would think too, at the top of the list, and I've seen this with my own child, helping them be more confident in the subject area is a big part of what the tutor does.
It is. The increased confidence is huge. And as once a student can feel better and feel more confident, they're able to, you know, do better grades and do well on their tests. And, you know, studies have shown that tutored students increase an average of 2.1 grade levels for every one grade level of their non-tutored classmates. So really, the evidence is there that tutoring works.
If you can afford it, the investment does pay off. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and the price doesn't have to be a sticking point for a lot of parents. Most of the most tutors, you know, in the area will range between, you know, $35 to $75 an hour. However, that's not to discredit looking for tutors at your local library, community centers, churches. The price tag doesn't dictate the quality of the service. So I wouldn't want anyone to be deterred from seeking a tutor because they think, oh, I can't afford it. And actually, in fact, most of the students I work with, you know, they're getting back on track in 2 to 3 lessons, and then I don't hear from them again. That they're doing great.
So that's great.
It's not this long-term investment. It's just, you know, a short-term getting the students on track, getting them caught up, getting them ahead, and then they can just start tutoring their classmates.
Maybe earn some money for mom and dad right now.
Yeah.
she's Michelle Kaiser, lead tutor at Empower Tutoring, making math work and lots of other subjects. Now is the time to seek help if your child is struggling in a subject. It's that time of year again. Michelle, a pleasure, and thanks for being with
us. Thank you so much.
And we're back in a moment as Culpepper wraps up an amazing weekend in Jacksonville sports.
In April 1864, the steamship Maple Leaf was sunk by a Confederate mine in the St. John's River. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Keith Holland, who located and excavated the ship. We'll explore the handwritten 19th century memoir of David Watt and discuss the play A Vote, A Voice that looks at civil rights history in Orlando. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
You want the best of both political worlds? Try running for president while being an active member of Congress.
So as long as they have excellent staffs, both in their district and in Washington, the overwhelming majority of their work can still get done, even if they're on the presidential campaign trail.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Yeah, that's a pretty good setup. We'll tell you more about it next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
If you love All Things Considered, consider joining us a few hours early for Afternoons on WJCT. The Takeaway offers a fresh way to look at the news, featuring critical conversations, reports from the field, and listener participation. That's followed by The World, with engaging voices to illuminate what's going on around the globe and why it matters to you. It's the smart way to spend your afternoons. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, we may have just experienced the greatest week of local pro sports in Jacksonville history.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
So says our own Cole Pepper. He's on the line now with a look at a very winning weekend. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, you can qualify this in a lot of different ways. The greatest weekend of pro sports. You might look and say, well, the most big events or the most attendance at events or what have you. But if you want to just talk about winning and the most teams winning, this was an amazing week for Jacksonville. Let's start with the Jaguars. Yes, it was a preseason game. Yes, it was the preseason opener. We don't want to put too much into it. Quite honestly, I hate to even lead with the score of a preseason game because the final score really doesn't matter as much, but a 23-21 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers did have plenty of highlights, including what it certainly appears to be Blake Bortles taking that next step and becoming the kind of quarterback that the Jaguars thought he would become when they used a first-round pick on him. So that's a real positive. And Bortles, after the contest, had this to say.
You know, I think we did some good stuff. I think we ran the ball well, and that's what we wanted to do. That's a big part of who we are. We want to be able to run the football, and that's going to open up the rest of our offense.
Bortles, as he usually does, deflecting some of the attention to other parts of the team, some of the praise going elsewhere, but he was terrific. Just 4 incomplete passes in 15 attempts, and 3 of those incomplete passes were right on the money and were just flat-out dropped by Jaguars receivers. So the accuracy was certainly there. He looked very good. He'll need to take some more steps, but it's a really a very good start. Now, there are some areas the Jaguars need to work on. Left tackle Luke Jokel whiffed on the very first pass rush, and he has to be better. And I think, in fact, all of the guys who were drafted in his draft class, which was the first draft class for Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, need to have better years here this year. And the 3 guys you really target in on would be Jokel, the left tackle, second-round pick from that year, Jonathan Cyprian, the safety, who was one of two Jaguars that came away with broken bones in their hands. He's going to miss the rest of the preseason. And then the third would be Dwayne Gross, who is a cornerback who played okay throughout the course, but has not been necessarily a standout. So some real positives for the Jaguars, and it's going to be interesting the next time out. They go to New York to face Tom Coughlin's Giants, and Melissa, maybe the last time that a Jaguars team ever faces a Tom Coughlin-coached team. Who knows how much longer Coughlin will be coaching.
He's
the oldest coach in the National Football League now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'll be a good one to watch. And what nice momentum for Jacksonville going up for that game. And speaking of momentum, another win this weekend as the Sharks, as you always call them, Cole, beat the hated Orlando Predators.
The hated Orlando Predators, and this was a big one. It was in the playoffs, and it clinched the spot for the Sharks in the conference title game. They'll play Sunday against the Philadelphia Soul for a shot at the Arena Bowl. Philly lost only three games all year, but two of them were losses to the Sharks. So this should be a big one. There's also some playoff history between the Sharks and the Soul. In 2012 and in 2013, Philly bounced the Sharks out of the playoffs. So these have been two of the more successful teams in the Arena Football League, particularly in the East. And the chance to play for the Arena Bowl championship is on the line with a face-off on Sunday.
Yeah, but the wins don't stop there. The Armada and the Suns both won this weekend. So all of our teams had winning weekends. This is just unprecedented.
Yeah, we've never had, of course, we never could have it because it's the first year for the Armada, but to have all four major sports teams playing at this time is really something. The Armada actually won twice this week. Wednesday, a 3-0 victory over Carolina, and then on Saturday, a 1-0 victory as well. Now this sets up the Armada. They play at San Antonio, then back home against San Antonio the next two Saturdays. San Antonio is the last place team in the league, so the Armada are right back in the playoff chase. And the Suns, who won a weekend series in Jackson, Tennessee, are back home starting tomorrow. Two more home series remaining for the Suns with the Bragans as owners, and then that's it.
That's right. Now, I have to give you props, Cole, as an incredible contributor to this program. You, I'm told, you might have had a little flat tire, and you still managed to call into the show. You are the winningest champion of all when it comes to Jacksonville sports, Culpepper. Let me just say that right now.
Has AAA, just a little bump
in the road. Has AAA showed up yet? They better not be keeping Culpepper waiting. That's all I have to say.
No, you know what? I'm kind of an individualist, so I drag the car to the nearest gas pump and fill it up as much as possible, and I'll limp somewhere to get the thing patched next.
Get out of here. Why am I not surprised?
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Man, well,
you got to take care of business.
Well, he's Culpepper again. Unprecedented wins for all of our teams over the weekend. Very exciting sports news for Jacksonville. Follow Cole on Twitter at Culpepper Cole. Next week, hope to see you in studio. Thanks for calling in. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast, now up on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, a new report from the Federal Reserve says student loan debt now surpasses what people owe on their cars and their credit cards. Ballooning student debt, and what the presidential candidates are saying about those soaring college costs. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.